Chapter 17. Heso. We headed south for a few days after that. I was still deciding how to work the towns with Risa while avoiding the recruiters, so I wanted some more time away from the main roads. They would be marching the conscripts back and forth, taking them all south to Colmar, or one of the other coastal cities, there to be armed, packed up into some ship's hold, and sailed to Valhaz to kill many strangers. So we stayed in the heart of Arnsberg where the trees were thick, where they were so thick I couldn't see Sunna. I kept my eyes on the high country as we traveled. Sometimes the clouds parted enough for me to see a river far overhead. It ran to the south, and so we just kept beneath it as we went, and when it became too dark at night to see, we would camp. The town we came from, small village really, paid off better than I'd hoped, yet not nearly as much as I'd preferred. There had been a cart after all, though a small one. It had a single axle, and you couldn't ride in the damned thing, but it was well enough to carry the food I'd purchased, plus a few other sundries. I had fresh clothing as well, clothing finer than anything I'd owned before, clothing a working man would wear. The shirt had been dyed a deep green, and the pants were brown. Neither had any rips or holes. And then, because I was feeling giddy with money, I purchased a real belt and coat for the evenings. I had to keep the ill-fitting boots. Nobody that far north had a pair of boots to sell, not a good pair. I couldn't expect to find anything new until we found a real city. And that was a problem I was still working on, the real cities. I didn't do as well for Risa. At first, I'd asked to see the wife of the largest man in town, hoping I could buy a few garments from her that might possibly, maybe, fit a goddamn giant. But their largest man wasn't large enough. Then I asked for the wife of the fattest man, but you're more likely to find an honest lord than you are a fat peasant in the far north. Finally, I had to settle for two pairs of the largest breeches I could find, thinking I could cut them down and then sew them back together with a bit of thread. It was unnecessary. He could pull on the larger pair. A pair of breeches that on me would hoist clear to my tits and hang a good foos past my heels. They were tied around his waist, so I cut slits at the hips for his comfort and held them up with my old rope belt. Then I had to cut another two slits along the length of each leg so his thighs would fit without splitting the seams. And by the time I was done, he appeared to be wearing some knee-length leggings that had been parted to show the hose underneath. I stood there looking at him, looking at his short pants, and thinking he resembled a half-naked lordling, and he slapped the tops of his legs and smiled at me. I tried to think of a way to get some decent clothes on him without visiting a real tailor, and could not. Not unless I bought bolts of fabric and tried to make it all myself. But I was trying to help him look decent, not like he'd been victimized. Maybe I could coax a tailor to come meet us outside of whatever city I found him in. That might be the way, but it would also cause the tailor to talk, and it wouldn't matter how much I paid for him to keep his mouth shut. They always talk, the fucking city merchants. Sometimes I think they all get together in a secret club to share their secret notes, and so get over on the rest of us. But these were still problems for later. We were walking together through Arnsberg, picking our path around the trees at an easy pace. The little cart Ambrosius pulled was loaded down with provisions and cheap potato liquor. It creaked along the uneven forest floor like an old lady, heavy enough that when a wheel hung up on a root, Ambrosius didn't have the strength to pull it over, and Risa would have to lift it along. After a while, I noticed the giant made it a habit to pet my donkey whenever he came to help. He would pass a hand over Ambrosius's neck, and then later, after the cart was moving again, would give him another swipe down the spine as if to say, "It's okay. We're asking too much of you with this cart. Just pull it the best you can, and I'll be here when you can't." For a wonder, the donkey led him. Most people would have just had the shit bitten out of them. He was a good old donkey. We traveled a couple of days, I think, and even though we took a leisurely pace, I was starting to wonder when we'd hit the edge of the wood. It was down there somewhere, I knew, and then beyond that, a stretch of fields and farmland before the first large towns. I knew we must have passed Plotzdorf more than a day before, and tried to remember which towns were beyond, but a long time had passed since I'd gone so far south. I supposed I'd stop at the first farm we saw to ask. I wondered about our cart as we went. It wasn't large, as I've said, but it was still of a good size. We would have to keep off the roads once we got out in the open, walking instead between the hills down low, where we would be hidden from all but those in the high country, assuming they could see that far. I thought maybe we'd have to abandon the cart at some point if the trail got too rough. So many concerns promising to become problems later down the line. But we had that liquor. High spirits make future problems easier to face, I found. It was our third night in the forest, I think, when they tried to rob us. In the evening, long after we'd made camp. I'd found some mushrooms earlier that day and was cooking them over the fire with some potatoes and rosemary, and I really don't know if they'd been following us through the woods or if they'd just stumbled upon us by accident. They could have been following us, I guess. We made no efforts to travel silently. The three of us, I and the giant and the donkey, reposed on the soft ground beneath a tree with a small cook fire puffing smoke up into the air, me drinking silently while Risa scratched Ambrosius behind the ears until he was unconscious. They were getting along quite well by then. Ambrosius would be your closest companion if only you'd never stop scratching him, and Risa seemed to get happier the more he did it, so pretty soon the two idiots were all over each other, as if neither could stop. I wondered sometimes if I left them out there in the woods, could I come back at some later time, say a couple of years, and find them in the same spot, Risa scratching like a fool and Ambrosius laying comatose in the dirt. I thought I might. I thought it might be possible. And that was all right. They were doing it again that evening. I lay on a blanket in the dirt with my back propped up against a log and watched them. The fire and the drink warmed me, and it could have been very nice. There were two of them. Ambrosius heard them first, I think. We were all of us laying there happily. Then the donkey's head came up and he looked around. A few moments later, two men walked into the firelight. One of them had a bow at half draw. The other held a short sword. I didn't like that sword. You could explain a bow. Lots of people had a bow in the far north. Plenty of them hunted. The more prosperous who could afford to bribe their local forester, or if they lived far enough away, they could just hunt without much fear of being discovered. A sword was different. You had to be standing military or guard to have one. A smith needed a writ of permission to craft them even. Those found guilty of unlawfully carrying a sword were subject to severe punishment. It varied by lord, but chopped fingers and hands were not uncommon. But someone living on the road, a bandit even, who carried a sword, was perilous. He was already desperate, already taking huge risks with his life. Most people died after an amputation. The lords who pressed sentence upon them claimed it was the final judgment of the gods. They tramped right into our little camp and then drew up short when they got a look at the giant. The one with the bow changed his target several times, pointing the arrow at me, but always being drawn back to Risa. Neither of the men could stop looking at him. Shit, I sighed. Look at the size of him, one of them said. You lads have names? I tried. They glanced at each other but would not say. Shut up. Fine, easy. What is it you want? The one with the sword kept looking at the pan sizzling over the fire. I saw his nostrils flare and his neck stretch toward the food. I don't think he realized he was doing it. You're hungry then? There's food enough. Come, put the weapons away and help us eat this. I was in an unnaturally good mood. Potato liquor always did it to me. The one with the bow said, fairly generous with his food. Short sword said, maybe he can afford to be. Well, if it keeps me from being pierced with a fucking arrow, I said. They looked at each other a moment, then went back to staring at Risa. On your feet, short sword said, almost yelped. I sighed and leaned over to get a knee under me. Groaning, I said, look, lads, it's really... Shut your mouth! Go fucking rich folk. You think it's always your time to speak? Shut up! Always your time, hey? Said the one with the bow. I decided then not to like either of them. Risa stopped scratching Ambrosius and climbed to his feet. It took him a long time to get there, and as he rose, the two bandits started looking like sad, scared little men in a hurry. They each took a full step back, and the one with the bow drew it until the nock rested against his cheek. Ambrosius looked up at Risa as though he was an asshole for removing his scratching hand. What in the fuck have you gotten us into, Haso?
Shut up! Just keep the arrow on the big one. And don't use my name, idiot!
The one with the bow cringed away at this. Haso, is it? I began. It was a mistake, clearly. Haso advanced on me, forgetting, I guess, to be afraid of the giant. He put the tip of the sword into the hollow of my throat and said,
I said, shut up! Shut your rich bastard's mouth!
Through stiffened lips, I said, sorry. Easy. Sorry, just tell us what you're looking for. We'll see if we can give it to you. He pressed the sword in, and I could feel that the tip was dull. I looked down, and in the firelight saw that the blade was pitted with rust. Then he jammed it in harder, and I had to look up at the tree boughs.
You won't give us anything, he hissed. We take what we want.
By all the great gangrenous gods, but he's fucking huge,
the man with the bow whimpered. You should see his cock, I said. They went silent a moment, but not before I saw the one with the bow crack a smile. It was good. It made me feel better about our chances.
You keep that bow on him, Haso said.
He lowered his sword. I noticed then that he had no sheath, went to the cart and started pawing through its contents. And then many different things happened all at once. Risa must not have liked Haso helping himself to our food. He rushed over and thrust an arm out between Haso and the cart, like he was trying to bar Haso's way instead of hurting him. But these men must have thought he was attacking all right. Haso flinched back like a viper had snapped at him from the inside of the sack he'd been searching. He stumbled a step or three, and then swung his sword, wildly it seemed, at Risa, who now also flinched and flailed out with his hands. The blade bounced off Risa's elbow, which he seemed not to notice at all. But his hand, or forearm, or some part of him, he moved so damn fast it was impossible to tell, cracked Haso across the head and sent him colliding into a tree. The sword went flying from Haso's hand on impact, and I dove for it, hoping to hit the ground, grab it, and roll back to my feet, but it ended up looking much better in my imagination. Actually, I hit the dirt, skidded a few paces on my shoulder, and then had to scramble to reach the stupid sword. By the time I had it in hand, I saw the one with the bow, backing slowly away. But he wasn't looking at me. His eyes were locked on Risa. I looked at Risa, too. Risa wasn't looking at either of us. He seemed to have forgotten all about us. He was looking down at his thigh, out of which protruded an arrow. Risa? Risa, you're wounded, I said. Yes, yes, I know, it wasn't a very bright thing to say. I was thinking about all the times that other people in my life had taken a similar wound, a cut to the arm maybe, or a broken limb. The physicians always said that a puncture of the skin must be poulticed in mud and moss to bar the air from entering the body. Leaving the wound untended let the outside in, created a discrecy that might eventually kill you. Having lived long enough to see these things myself, I knew them to be true. In the meantime, Risa pulled the arrow from his leg and looked at it curiously. The archer just stood there like a fool. He could have run. It seemed Risa didn't have to pull very hard, as if the tip had buried only shallowly in the muscle. At the time, I didn't give this much thought. I supposed that maybe the one who'd loosed the arrow had done so at half a draw, or maybe the bow was of poor quality. Now there are many things I'll have to explain when I finally die. When I stand before the High Nine beyond my last day, I must face them all once again and answer for my deeds. In nearly every case, this does not concern me. I have done things considered both good and bad. But then I found that everyone has, even the priests, who were supposed to be the model of our best behavior and so often turn out to be the worst of us all. and the things I've done, the low things and the petty things, and the hurtful and thoughtless and hateful, the careless, mundane and profane. All of them were no worse than the mourning habits of the highest priests. This I know. I used to climb to Sunna's throne and watch many of them, and I know their deeds, if not the secrets of their hearts. Because I know their deeds as well as I know mine, I tell myself I do not fear the final trial. But one thing I'm not looking forward to is trying to explain why it was that Risa, who had just extracted the arrow from his leg, carried it over to the man who had loosed it and tried to give it back. The man with the bow shrank away from Risa as he approached, but then when the arrow was offered, he looked at it, curious, and pretty soon his hand was reaching, slow, as if he feared he was being tricked. I strode over and cracked him across his head with Heso's sword. It was the first time I'd ever held a sword. I didn't know how to swing it, so when the flat bounced off his skull, he collapsed and started moaning instead of just bleeding out into the dirt. I grabbed the arrow and shouted, "What the fuck are you doing, Risa?" He let his hand drop and shook his head. He seemed pretty confused. He looked at me like I was being unreasonable. "And you, you shit-eating mongrel, do you have any idea who you just wounded?" I demanded of the archer. He was cradling the back of his head, so I kicked him in the ribs. "What happens when he falls ill? What am I supposed to do if he dies?" He groaned and rolled away as I continued to kick him. I was suddenly glad for my boots, overlarge or not. Then Risa was standing in front of me. I don't know why. He had me by the shoulders, and there were tears in his eyes from the pain in his leg. The archer wasn't where I left him. He was over by a tree, huddled down among its roots as if he sheltered there. He looked at me, and in the firelight, I saw his face was battered, and one whole side was covered in a sheet of blood. He was panting and would not look at either of us. I was disoriented and out of breath, couldn't understand why so many things felt different. When I tried to pull away from Risa, he wouldn't let me go at first. Then I looked at him a certain way and he released me. I wondered for a moment what to do next, but the world was still making very little sense. I stalled for time by kicking the pieces of the broken bow into the fire. "Collect your things and fuck off elsewhere," I panted, and began looking around for the sword. Also, I tried to remember where I'd lost it so I could find it. I was digging through some bushes or something, I think, when Risa wailed. It felt like my guts had dropped through my ass when I turned around to look. I was terrified something more had happened to him. Maybe he hurt himself in some new way, or the archer had found his balls and tried another attack. It was none of these things, though. Risa was just crouched over Heso, shaking him, soft at first, but then harder and harder, and Heso not responding. Flopping around in the dirt by the fire, the only movement of his body caused by the giant, who wept as he shook, harder and harder.